supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Dan Gottlieb, thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. A recent Gallup poll brings us no surprises. Most of us say the economy is poor. The majority of us are angry about the financial crisis the country is facing. And most of us don't really understand the details. Today, we discuss economic anxiety in the midst of this financial crisis and what we can do to help get through these hard times. I'm joined on the telephone by Dr. Kathleen Guarnaris, who's a financial psychologist who works with companies and individuals to understand the psychology of money. Kathleen, welcome to the show. We'll have her up in just a minute. I'm also joined here in the studio by Dr. Sarah Kinsman. She's a pediatrician and adolescent specialist right here in Philadelphia at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we invite you to join us for the show. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We'd like to hear from you if you've got financial anxiety, if you are about to lose your job or have. We'd also like to hear from kids. Sarah and I spoke before the show about adolescents, and if you've got your own financial anxiety or your family does, please give us a call. 888-477-9499. I promise I won't ask you why you're not in school. That's just between you and whoever. Well, let's open the show with a clip that our executive producer, Mike and Scott, did. She spoke with some people about how economic anxiety is affecting their lives. Let's listen.
News about the slow economy and eliminated jobs are everywhere. Still, many people are caught completely by surprise when they are laid off.
I was just floored. My jaw literally dropped because I just did not expect that at all.
Ed is a Philadelphia TV news writer. When he was called into his HR office on that day, he thought he was going to discuss the organization of the newsroom. 30 minutes later, he was home, newly unemployed. In the months since then, Ed has felt an impact on his mental health.
It's caused a lot of anxiety and depression. The worst part is in the morning when I wake up because I feel like I have to start this day. You know, here we go again. Don't have a job. Better get on the computer. You know, better make my phone calls. And then the worry over money and when my unemployment's going to run out.
Gail, a Philadelphia graphic designer, has been unemployed for 3 months. She has felt the same worries about money and the future, but when she was first laid off, Gail had an added concern, how to tell her two sons.
I was worried about how I was going to assure the kids that we were going to be okay, that we were going to be able to be okay until I was able to find another job.
When Gail's sons, 16-year-old Frank and 12-year-old Jay, came home from school that day, she sat down with them.
She told me and I, you know, it was a sudden rush of anxiety, and I was just worried that there would be some very serious sacrifices, even as serious as moving to a different town or just into like a very much smaller house.
I was a little shocked because she's been working there for as long as I can remember.
Both of Gail's sons say that they are not as worried about having to move as they were in the beginning. And while they've learned that the family budget can be flexible, they are still anxious about their financial future. For the younger son, Jake, his mom's unemployment has had some pleasant side effects.
Now I see her when I come home from, like, school and camp.
A fact Frank is none too happy about.
You know, when my mom was at work, people would come over and be able to just, like, sit around and do fun stuff and talk as loud as they want and not really have to censor anything. But now, with my mom constantly at home, this isn't the hot spot anymore for my friends to come to.
Gail has been on several interviews since her layoff and is confident that she'll be able to find a new position. News writer Ed is frustrated at not having found a job yet and also feels increasingly isolated.
I don't have the interaction I used to have, the social interaction I used to have at work, and I don't feel I should be going out and spending money in a social situation because of the finance situation.
As his job search continues, Ed has posted a reminder to stay positive on his refrigerator.
Progress, not perfection, to remind me just to do something productive each day, whether it was looking for a job, making a phone call, sending an email, or cleaning the house.
From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, I'm Mike and Scott.
Let's go to Kathleen Guarneris. Kathleen, I want to make an observation about Ed. When we first heard from Ed in the beginning, you could almost hear the anxiety in his voice, almost tremulous. What can a psychotherapist do when the fear is that high and one would argue that realistic? I mean, you know, there really are wolves out there, you know?
So, absolutely.
So what can one do to manage their anxiety when it's realistic? It's not neurotic, as we used to say in the old days.
Mm-hmm. Well, for someone like Ed, I think if he was in some type of therapy setting, it would be helping him to step back and take perspective with the therapist's help to gain a sense of what he has control over, what he doesn't. And that includes his thinking process. So it would really be to have an outlet where he could talk about the anxiety and worry. Sometimes with anxiety and worry, what happens is, especially he was mentioning the feelings of isolation, when somebody's grappling with that on their own, it's not that it's not realistic, but it gains tremendous power in their mind because they're not even sometimes talking to some trusted people about it so that they can have a place to put it. Figure out what is the realistic situation, what you do have to deal with, and figure out how to cope with that and come up with a plan versus all of the, I would say, the muck that starts to occupy the mind that actually starts to really limit a clear decision process, which starts to limit a clear job search because your mind starts taking over in its power and doesn't always allow you to have the same clarity about what's my situation today, what's my situation in a week likely to be like. So really in therapy, it would be about helping Ed to prioritize the top two things he needs to do, for example, that week, and come up with other coping strategies to limit his anxiety. So as a concrete example, that might be what other ways can he spend some of his time with his family or with friends, whomever it may be, that give him some sense of joy and identity back, even if he can't control the job situation right now. So it's helping him to really almost compartmentalize some of the worry so that you're not taking it away because some of it's realistic about his situation, but giving him substitutions to bring back more positive feelings and to empower him in other areas.
Hmm. I want to talk about the family we listened to. And Sarah, when I was watching you listen to that family, I had some orthopedic concerns about you. You were nodding your head so vigorously. It sounded like these are stories you have heard before, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I think that children are very worried about their parents, but they also are developmentally worried about themselves. So both of those things are going on simultaneously. Sometimes the parents don't realize there's a worry for them in there, but that's what those kids were saying. You know, I was worried about my mom. My gosh, we should always had this job. This is what we were used to. We're used to our home. And then, I'm not going to be able to do all the social things I want to do. Mom's around more. So those things are going on simultaneously for kids when they hear that their parent may have lost a job or their job is in jeopardy or there's a financial change.
You're just tuning in, we're talking about the impact of the financial crisis on us as individuals, on families, not just for those who have lost jobs, but for those who just feel increasing anxiety about their jobs. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Kathleen Guarneros, I want to step back a little bit here. Your background begins with Goldman Sachs, but then you got your doctorate in psychology and an MBA. I was here in Widener, I think, and specializing in understanding the relationship between humans and their money. So how did you get interested in this?
How did I get interested in that? That's a great question. I think it started early in my career at Goldman Sachs. I was primarily on the human resources side and leaning a little bit towards becoming a psychologist, but I think being literally in the center of this tremendous movement and energy and motivation and work ethic around money itself being the service, and really just as a fly on the wall, if you will, watching how different people react to things and how it manifests itself in the work situation. So I think then as I started to study human behavior itself, I think that seed always came along with me to start looking at really how money itself, for psychology as a field, we have traditionally ignored the role of money and studying it, even though throughout time there's always been some type of form of exchange for people through every culture, regardless of how that culture may look at money. And especially in our modern time, with families in particular, with marriages, and then certainly if you fold in work behavior, money is this strong piece of all of our relationships. And with that, underneath that, it's really about our psychological and emotional values as much as it is some type of tangible form of exchange to buy goods or to sell goods. So I think my interest came from really examining what happens at the collective level in terms of stock market volatility, et cetera. Because traditional economic theory, while it has many great tenets to offer us, really can't explain a lot of the irrational behavior, the illogical behavior that we can see in the stock market through historical trending. And then if you look at more of the family or individual level, you really have so many different emotions that spill in for people when it comes to their money. It can be about love, self-esteem, freedom, power, identity, and achievement.
Well, it's rarely about money. I mean, once you're out of poverty, then money really isn't about money anymore. It's about what it represents to you.
Absolutely.
And it's funny, as a marital therapist, I watch couples arguing about money, but they're arguing about two completely different things that they're not aware of.
And that's what a lot of my research revealed, which is money is the number one cited behavior for marital issues or divorce. But if you actually look underneath, it's the communication patterns and the value conflict that comes up around money. It doesn't mean that there might not be money tension and true money anxiety in terms of paying the mortgage and so on, but it's actually how the couple deals with that, how the family deals with that, that's a better predictor of whether or not people will stay together or how satisfied they are in a marriage.
Hmm. It has been said, Kathleen, that the market is driven by, obviously it's driven by emotions, but the emotions that drive it are about fear and greed. And clearly it's been driven by greed now, and we are living with the fear, yes?
Yes, I would agree with that. I think what we're observing in a general sense is historical patterns do tend to repeat. So although this is the biggest financial crisis of, I would say, the current generation, and certainly since the time of the Depression, we have seen other types of bubbles burst. For example, at the end of the 90s, the dot-com burst. So when the wave is rising, the way humans tend to follow it is everybody wants to be on the wave. So potentially you could say that's greed, but in my opinion, from my perspective, I don't think it's just about greed. I think it's about social comparison theory. I think there's something called herding behavior. If you picture a herd of cows, we look around us, and as humans, we are social animals. And even if we think we have strong individual opinions, we look around at what's happening, and we don't like to get left behind. Sometimes that could be motivated by greed, but and there are certainly some values that the American culture is laden with when it comes to money and materialism. I think it's not just about greed, quote-unquote, that's talked about on TV on Wall Street side. I think it was a reciprocal process that the average person didn't want to get left behind in a wave. So in the dot-com, people didn't want to get left behind. In housing, they didn't want to get left behind. And the herd, regardless of whether it makes sense or whether it's sustainable, everybody tries to ride the wave together, and the wave inevitably crashes.
Let me argue with you. Well, not argue, but I just want to add a caveat. Clearly, there's that herding behavior, and there's that anxiety about being left behind, so we want to be part of. But there's also a part of us, in my experience, that wants to be unique, that wants to be better than at the mm-hmm. same time. And those are potentially pretty conflicting motives. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm thinking about how a lot of this has to do with also having prestige, what it means for your family to be able to do this, what it means to be able to make this much money, what it means to be able to take that risk and be successful with that risk. So I think that the prestige issue and what it means for you is very important. And I also think, from somebody who works with families, what I see is a substitution of being able to provide for your kids as a way of showing them that you love them. And if you provide enough, you'll bring them up right rather than bring them up, and which I think is old-fashioned concept. So I think it gets mixed together.
Yeah, there's that symbolism. Let's take a very short break here. I want to come back. We've got a lot of callers on the line, and I want to get to the underpinnings of what the psychology is, both on Wall Street and on Main Street. People, you both are dealing with face to face. We are talking about the economy. We're talking about its impact on us as individuals, on our families. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you are in the financial business, give us a call. If you are in a family and your family has been affected, give us a call. My guests are Dr. Sarah Kinsman. She's a pediatrician specializing in adolescence at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I'm also joined by Kathleen Guarnera. She's on the telephone. She's a financial psychologist who works with companies and individuals to understand the psychology of money. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital supports WHYY and supports patients who have prostate cancer with more than just the latest treatments. Jefferson's Buddy program puts patients with prostate cancer, men who sometimes find it difficult to discuss their condition, in touch with former patients they can talk to. Jefferson is a National Cancer Institute designated center. More information available on the web at jeffersonhospital.org or at 1-800-JEFF-NOW.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jefford Shorey, about the theological disputes that are splitting the U.S. Anglican community, including the ordination of the first openly gay bishop. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about the economy and its impact on us, obviously on a psychological level. My guests are Dr. Sarah Kinsman. She's a pediatrician at CHOP who specializes in adolescents and their behavior. I'm also joined by Dr. Kathleen Guarneras on the telephone. She's a financial psychologist, a PhD and MBA. She's worked on Wall Street and on Main Street and consults with both. Our number is 888-477-9499. Kathleen, I said you worked on Wall Street and Main Street, and you work with individual humans, too. What's the difference between the two these days?
The difference between the type of work or?
No, between what they bring to you when they call you for an appointment.
Okay, sure. Well, I would say on the corporate side, when I work with folks on Wall Street or with Wall Street institutions, financial institutions, to them I'm working more in a consultative capacity, helping them a lot of times the executive leadership work with helping their sales force or the financial professionals really how do they most effectively interface with their clients. So I help them to gain more insight, educate them about what we call principles of behavioral finance, to really understand the dynamics behind people's money personalities, if you will, so that as if they're going to be as effective as they can be with their clients, I help them get a more empathy towards the worldview of their clients and to understand, even, for example, for genders, that women and men actually might look at money differently. So rather than just present them with the finances or the financial picture from the professional side, really to do it from the client side so that it can really be very collaborative and that they can get to a better place together.
All right, so let me follow up two things you said. Money personality.
Right.
Explain. What is that?
Money personality, I would argue, and that all of us have one. Because, again, as I said a bit earlier, we can't separate money out of our lives. It's part and parcel of how we function, of our relationships, how we work as society. So from the time that we are born, we start to form this personality like we would our regular personality through cultural, through gender, through religion, and certainly from the family that we grew up in. So if people think back to what they observed in their family growing up, the way that your parents or your parents showed you examples, especially as kids observe their parents dealing with money, dealing with purchases, were they fearful? Did they spend easily? Were there fights about money? Did they never talk about money, et cetera? That over time, between that and some of our life experiences, ultimately we develop a money personality that tends to be a pattern of behaviors.
So that if we grow up with financial anxiety, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking of myself, I mean, we were comfortably middle class, and yet there was a great deal of financial anxiety in the home. If we grow up with financial anxiety and it's unexamined, then we carry it forth, then you can't earn enough money. There's no there. You can't earn enough to feel better because the problem is not money, it's anxiety.
That's right. And as an adult, it sounds like objectively you can say, boy, there was enough not to warrant that level of anxiety. But the anxiety, and especially as a child, you take on your parents' anxiety, and it's like a something that can fester almost inside of you. So children are not exposed to the more objective discussions often that their parents may have about, well, do we have enough to pay the mortgage? What they observe most strongly and they internalize most is the feelings associated with it.
Well, let me turn to Sarah and check that out, because you're seeing whole families where they do have an anxiety and where they've been impacted.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you're saying before we go to the phones.
Right. I think that it depends on what socioeconomic status a child is a part of. So I think in some families, kids are very, very clear about how their parents are struggling in a real way. And I think about one of my neighbors. We were all, a bunch of kids were hanging out, and we asked, what would you do if you had $1 million? And he was 10 at the time, and there were three other 10-year-old boys, and one of them, the wealthier, was going to buy a car, et cetera. And this little kid said, first thing I would do is take care of my grandma's bills. And once we get the bills, then we can do this. And he is a remarkable young man and very sensitive to what was going on with his family. So I think it depends on where kids are in the socioeconomic strata, how, I think it builds on what you're saying, Kathleen, about the money personality, about where your place is, what you need, how anxious you are, et cetera.
Well, you wouldn't want your children to feel like they're responsible for carrying the ball. On the other hand, you wouldn't want them to not care. So What's a parent to do? Where do you go with that?
Yeah, I think that that is a really big challenge for parents, is to be a parent and feel that you can express to your child you're in charge, you are helping direct their lives, and you're in charge of the finances. At the same time, when the kids are seeing that the electric is turned off in your home, which does happen for families, the parent can look very in charge and still experience not being able to have refrigerated food.
I remember as I listened to you years ago, I was treating a woman for pretty severe depression, and her daughter was getting ready to go to college on the West Coast, and the daughter came into a session and said, "Mom, I don't want to go. I mean, you're in bad shape here, and your marriage is not good. I don't want to leave you." And the mother said, "Honey, I am depressed, and I am suffering, and you're right about the marriage, and I'm working on it. I'm in therapy. I'm doing everything I can, and you go do your life, and let me take joy on that, and if I need you back here, I'll call you." And it seems to me that that kind of wisdom would work in this situation, too, yes?
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely the way. It's a great example is, yep, things are tough. We're going through a tough time. It's very obvious to our family. We're not doing this, this, and this the way we used to. But let's keep going. And your job as a child is to do well in school and to take out the garbage or whatever your job is. But you keep being the child, and, yep, we'll get through this.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Michelle on the line. Michelle, hi, you're on Voices.
Hi, I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, I'll try to speak up and you can... Is that any better?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, our family, actually, I'm taking a lot of comfort in what you're saying. Our family's going through losing our house and all that right now, and financial extreme differences. And I have a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old boy. And the 8-year-old, it's affecting in many of the classical ways, like, you know, the stress and anxiety that I really think comes from him feeding off of me. And what I've done is just, you know, I focused on taking care of my anxiety, and I've noticed it goes down in the household extremely, like with mine going down. So,
how do you do it?
I go to a group called Codependence Anonymous to kind of let go of that control, because there's a lot of, you know, things that are going on that I have no control of. We kind of have to focus on the priorities.
I want to take your issue and turn to Kathleen. You know, when I was preparing this show, Kathleen, I was speaking of Michelle and her 12-step program. You know, I was thinking of the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to control the things I can, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah. So where do you land with this economy? I mean, it feels like a tsunami, and it feels like your life is out of control. And how do you figure all that out?
Well, thinking of what you just said and using Michelle as an example, the one thing is that, for the most part, it's safe to say we're all in this boat together. Partly what's happening is actually a healthy adaptive response, which is people are recognizing there's a threat, and there's a threat all over. For some people, it's more real, if you will, in terms of job loss or house loss versus others. But what can happen is we go into fight or flight. Most people are familiar with that. This is one of those situations that it's very natural to find yourself going into that threatened survival mode. And people commonly feel helpless, fearful, and because of that, agitated, worried, and then potentially panicky. So one of the pieces I would offer to the audience is, when you feel those overwhelming feelings, aside from the coping strategies of speaking to people and so on, one of the things that you have to be careful of is to not become impulsive in other parts of your life. Overeating, drinking to excess, actually spending behavior can get out of control because it's almost a form of denial. Instead, there are things that you can objectively look at your financial situation, compartmentalize it to figure out where you need to cut back, what you're most worried about, etc. But then there's something that I would say, this is more of a marathon, not a sprint for the American audience. or the American culture, rather. So for the audience, it's, you know, what other things can I do to empower myself and take control? Because I don't have control over the economy. I don't have control over whether or not I'm going to lose my job tomorrow. There's only a certain amount of control you can take in that, but there are other things that you can do. So for somebody like Michelle, right now she can't control the circumstances externally that's happening to her family, but she can use this as some type of modeling and teaching example for her children, such that if they were faced with this in 40 years, they would have had mom's example of courage and of honesty with them. And so there's ways that you can step back, and your form of control is actually coming internally.
Yeah, you're always being a role model. Sarah, the fight or flight business that Kathleen referred to is physiologic and is there to protect us from mountain lions. And the mountain lion is not there 100% of the time. And I think Michelle really highlights that you know, the danger is real and it's there. But at this very moment, if you're in a 12-step meeting, if you're home with your family, at this very moment, it's good. At this very moment, you're safe. You're with people you love. That doesn't negate the big picture. Mm-hmm. But often focusing on the big picture negates the moment where you are safe.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about Michelle and hoping that her clarity, that her anxiety is affecting her children, and her incredible strength in getting help, amazing, also allows her to take breaks and enjoy her children and have those moments where the three-year-old cracks everybody up and they just are there laughing their heads off because he's being or she's being so silly. And I think those things can be very, very life-saving when there is this chronic stress.
Michelle, thanks so much for your call, and I think I speak for both my guests and many of our listeners. I do wish you the best going forward. Let's see if we can take another caller before our break. We've got Judy on the line. Judy, hi, you're on Voices.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to ask your guest, with the background in business, how does one advise an older person about their finances? My mother had a small inheritance, and while we were at the bank, the person said, well, look, this money isn't doing you any good in the savings. Why don't you put most of it in a money market fund? So, I mean, currently we know what the circumstances are now, and I don't know whether I should tell her, hey, take it and put it back in the savings. I know about the raise in insured
let me interrupt you here, because neither one of our experts are in a position to talk to offer financial advice. But what I am hearing is the underpinning of your question is anxiety, and it's your anxiety about your mother, and I don't know if your mother has anxiety about her investments. But see, the question I hear first, and I want to hear from Kathleen, the question I hear first is, how do I manage my anxiety? And then how do I manage my investments? Is that a fair question, Kathleen?
Yes.
So that's where we have to go first. Judy, I hope that advice is somewhat helpful. I mean, obviously, any financial advice you've got to get from a financial expert, and I don't think there's one here. So,
Dan, what could I add one thing? Because we're not making necessarily predictions about where the market's going to go and what you should do today, because we don't know enough about your situation too. But one thing I'd mention, Judy, is these are very valid, realistic things to be thinking about that, and good for you that you are taking stock and stepping back. But right now there are a lot of shifts going on globally in the economy, I mean, meaning outside of even the U.S. Right now the government's taking certain actions. In a general sense, I would recommend that people don't run out tomorrow, if you will, and take it and start moving money around a lot. That's usually in response to the anxiety of the day, which many people have. It's really normal to have in situations like this. But, for example, sometimes people will feel the need almost to pull money out of the 401k and put it in cash or do this or do that. The market right now is going to fluctuate a lot. And even though there are a lot of losses, what we do know with historical trends is that market usually does rebound. Paradoxically, this is often a good time to invest, even though it can't feel that way to people. So just generally speaking, what I'd caution against is any sudden movement in any of your assets.
Well, the other problem, and I'll say to both of you, is that, you know, the news media makes their money on having news every minute, and they make their money on driving up emotions. I mean, they don't put boring news there. You know, they put news up there that's going to generate whatever the emotion du jour is. And today it's anxiety. And I have found a lot of people are getting into compulsive checking, whether it's about the market or the news or whatever it is. And checking does not help anxiety go away. It makes it worse in the long run. So I would advise Judy to contact an advisor and in the interim to take real good care of herself. We're going to have to take a short break. We're talking about the economy and its impact on us, our psyches, our sense of well-being, and our relationships. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. If the economy is having an effect on you, give us a call. Hey, give us a call if it's not having an effect on you. We'd like to hear from you. I want you to be my therapist. That's 888-477-9499. My guests are Kathleen Guarneros. She's a financial psychologist. She's a PhD and an MBA. She works with companies and individuals to help understand the psychology of money. I'm here with Dr. Sarah Kinsman, a pediatrician who specializes in adolescents and their behavior, and she is at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, and you're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
The Opera Company of Philadelphia season opens on October 10th with Fidelia, Beethoven's only opera. Starring Christine Gerke, Anthony Dean Griffey, and Greer Grimsley, Fidelio is presented in a contemporary new production by artist June Kaneko, October 10th through 24th at the Academy of Music. For information, 215-893-1018 or operaphila.org. The Opera Company of Philadelphia is a proud supporter of WHYY.
I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand.
For news that's concise.
This really was a day when the president wanted to send a signal to
some helpful advice.
You want to ask them, what kind of credentials do you have? What are your qualifications? What services do you offer?
And always something nice.
There are ponies here. 5, 6, 7. And it looks like there's a foal out there.
Join us on NPR's Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about economic anxiety, what the economy is doing to our psyches. My guests are Dr. Kathleen Guarneros, who's a financial psychologist. She works with companies and individuals. And Dr. Sarah Kinsman. She's a pediatrician and adolescent specialist at CHOP. Kathleen, I'm curious about one small thing. Our country has really villainized the people on who work on Wall Street. Is it having an impact on them psychologically?
Very much so. I'd actually be surprised if it wasn't. I almost think that would be a denial of the environment to some extent. I think if we look at pre-crisis, Wall Street, people have various feelings towards it, but especially in good economic times and through the 2000s, I would say, there can be a certain amount of glamorization. Sometimes they're admired, sometimes they aren't, but sometimes they're considered lucky and lucrative. But at a minimum, it's considered a stable industry and an industry that's the bulwark of our economy. So if you put a Wall Street professional at the center of a circle and start drawing sort of arrows and impinging upon them, right now they're dealing with what's happening with their own company, or potentially if you're a place like Lehman, you know, certainly a very different situation. What's happening with the government? What's happening with the stock market? You have the family asking you questions, wanting reassurance, potentially talking about anxiety. They have to help manage the worry and concerns of their own clients. And then, of course, importantly, there's their own self-anxiety about, and that starts to have implications for their sense of identity, their sense of self-worth. And right now, it's not uncommon for them to experience almost a shame and guilt because on the TV, as you had mentioned, Dan, in particular, there's the sensationalizing aspect of what's going on. And then the average person really has very angry feelings about what is globally being called Wall Street. And from somebody who's worked there, as well as some of my own social circle and marriage, there are so many very good people who work on Wall Street or in financial institutions who are quite ethical and honest and follow the rules. So they're really being bombarded by forces on all sides, and that can be very overwhelming right now. Everybody wants them to answer what's going to happen.
And nobody knows. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Miriam on the line. Miriam, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have sort of a two-part question. I am a 24-year-old college graduate who was working for the past 2 years in teaching and wanted to go back to school. And so I spent the summer looking for a full-time job, and when I didn't find one, sort of realized that I needed to keep my eye on the prize. So I'm working part-time right now, but in that sense, I'm very dependent on my family who, you know, I think sort of believed that after I graduated and sort of got myself established, that they were sort of done being my, you know, go-to financial support. So I guess my question in sort of two parts is, one, what do you think this is doing to sort of our interim post-adolescent young adults generation in terms of, you know, their own self-confidence and ability to sort of support themselves? And then secondly, what do you think this is doing to families who are now taking on burdens that they weren't necessarily anticipating at this point in their life?
Miriam, I'll make you a deal. I've got an expert who can answer both of your questions, but I want you to answer them both first.
Okay. Well, I know for myself it's been extraordinarily disheartening after, you know, being very independent for 2 years and being fully employed and having a salary and now sort of switching to an hourly wage and needing to ask my family for support for healthcare costs and car payments and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think it's also a concern for my family that, you know, my mom's a single mother and she did her best for a long time and I did very well in school and I think she sort of surprised to find herself back in a position and concerned for her own abilities to take care of the future.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Miriam, you are not alone out there. A lot of my patients have finished college, you know, done really well and are struggling right now. And first of all, that's what parents are there for. And it is a time, these historic times are times when you do fall back on parents and you fall back on family. And I was raised by two grandmothers who went through the Depression, and they taught me that that was something that happened in times like this. And so it is something that is real and is happening, and it is not permanent. You will not forever be living with your mom or needing your mom to help you with car payments, but you might for a little period of time. And what will happen later on is when your mom needs your help, you're going to be there to give your mom help. And that's the way families work. And it sounds like yours is working. And it's tough because I know your mom is anxious for herself and also helping you at the same time. And so that's something you both have to live with. But knowing that you're going back and forth giving to each other, I think is something that is really positive. Although certainly not what you anticipated. In other words, it's a different life course, but it's one that's happening.
You know, one of the things you keep addressing, Sarah, and might be relevant for Miriam here, you address it directly and indirectly, is the idea of context. And what I hear you saying to Miriam is, these are tough times, but that's all they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are not impacting on one's life. They're not impacting on a relationship. There's no long-term healthcare implications. These are tough times,
mm-hmm.
period.
Yep, these are times where you need to support each other and you need to do financial exchanges. And I know that comes with the independence that somebody who's 24 needs. It's actually that's a real toughie, and I hear that. It really is, but I think that you will be independent one day, and then actually you'll be giving your mom support one day.
Actually, I also want to add one other thing, Miriam, that you are far from the first generation. We did a show several years ago about a generation that Time magazine called Twixters. And what the research shows is that adolescence now often extends to age 30, that kids aren't finding stable careers, marriages, lifestyles for, you know, till they're 30 often. So once again, you're not in a minority.
Absolutely.
And I wish you and your mom the best. Thanks so much for calling, Miriam.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's go to Connie. Connie, hi, you're on Voices.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment because we've been going through this in our family for quite a while now before it hit other people. And I wanted to suggest and also ask you if this is okay, the following. We've had to explain to our children that there are people that you can't trust in the world, and this financial situation has caused that to have to come to the surface. And I have felt, as a person who is in the early part of the baby boomer generation, that we were raised too naive. And I just wanted to know if you think this is healthy for children to know that, you know, we can't always trust other people who sell us bad loans and things like that. So just wanted to comment on that and also ask you if you think that's okay.
I will. I'll react first because that pushes a button in me. I'll tell you a little bit about my history. I was always a trusting, loving guy. I was born about the same time you were. And I remember being criticized by my mother and extended family for being naive and too sensitive. I got those labels thrown at me. And I wondered if they were right and I was wrong, and if they were smart and I was dumb. And I wondered about that for many years, but now I look back on it in terms of happiness, well-being, feeling grounded and safe in the world. I've got all those things. I find myself a very happy person. I feel I'm living in a world that is good, and there are occasional, I don't know what name to call them on public radio, but, you know, they're out there, but they're in a very tiny minority, and that's the message I want your children to have, and that's the message I want my children to have. Yeah, they're bad people out there, but they're far, far, far from a majority. It's like Kathleen said of Wall Street. You know, there's some greedy people out there, but they're by and large they're good people. By and large, they're good people trying to do good things for their family, for themselves, and for the larger world. And am I being naive? I don't think it matters. Are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here, and so, I was wondering about, for a reaction from the doctors.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I did say it pushed my buttons. I should let somebody mm-hmm. else come in. Sorry about that. So let's hear from you first, Kathleen.
Well, one of the things I'm thinking, Connie, it sounds like you feel pretty strongly, and there might be something that in your life experience you mentioned going through this for a few years, so, you know, it sounds like there's good circumstances you've formed this opinion about what you'd like to do for your family. So as I listen, one of the things I'm thinking could be that it might be just a reframing issue of maybe how you raise your kids so that you don't feel like they're taken in by somebody, and there are some, especially in the world of the internet and other contexts, some predators out there, if you will. They'll be predators for different reasons on us, right? But there could be a way that you raise your kids to be empowering and talk to them about using very good judgment, question people's motives. Ask questions. Don't take things at face value all the time, so you use your head. So it might be more about building up their internal sense of control and empowering them, as opposed to the message being potentially at times too strong about being fearful of other, you know, many people's motives and so on. So it might be much more about coming from having a very clear, strong head on your shoulders, and there being nothing wrong with questioning people so that you get the answers you might need.
And Connie, just for future reference, I like Kathleen's answer way more than mine.
You and I are raised similar, and I've always been a very happy person also, so I totally understand. And I just wanted to share that, you know, bad things have happened to people because of, you know, untrustworthy people in power, and just wanted to bring up the subject. How do we teach our kids about that and still have them be happy? And I think we have a great answer here.
Yeah, we do, and I appreciate your call. I apologize for the sermon.
Excellent. Thank you.
Take care. So let me ask both of you in the just minute or so before we have to close, and I'll start with you, Sarah. What do our listeners need to know about how to cope with what's out there?
Yeah, I think how to cope is to find as much calm as you can and manage your anxiety as much as possible, to stay in routines, to stay connected to your community, to stay connected to your children, and to be in the present as much as possible and know you're riding a wave.
And I'm going to have to ask you, Kathleen, in about 30 seconds.
When I was studying this myself, I studied with someone named Olivia Mellon, another financial therapist. And in a course, she said, name the top three things that bring you joy. And basically, as you go around, they all cost less than $100 for most people. Maybe for some people it has to be 50. Find the other things that bring you joy, because this is a marathon, not a sprint, to manage the anxiety.
That's wonderful advice. Find the things that bring you joy. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. My guests have been Dr. Sarah Kinsman and Kathleen Guarneros. Guarneros is a financial psychologist who works with companies and individuals. Kinsman is a pediatrician and adolescent specialist at CHOP. If you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org. Next week, we've got a very special show coming up. We're interviewing surrogates from the McCain and the Obama camp to find out their positions on mental health and the new Mental Health Parity Act. You can reach me directly at drdangottlieb@aol.com. The engineer for today's show has been Kevin Griffin. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Voices in the Family is co-produced by Gita Simons and Alisa Walters. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Take care of yourselves, my friends.
Data.